Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
That's nice. Patrick Mahomes has a chance to finally win an award. He needs one of those. He could use one on his mantle. That there, that's Benny Heiss.
Hello.
That's BK. That's Kramer. I'm merely the sports machine, Sean Levine. Halfway home on a Thursday afternoon, taking you up until 6 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio. So,
can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
What's the Kramer reference?
That's his name.
Oh, I thought this
his
was sort of like
actually Kramer. Like, that's
hello,
our producer.
Hello, Kramer. I thought it was like an old Seinfeld, like no. He just sort of stumbles through the door.
No, like 23 years ago, a baby was born, and his parents looked at said baby and said, "He looks like a Kramer to me." And that's how we got our boy Kramer.
Kramer, I apologize.
No, you are fine.
Good to meet you.
Nice was it too. After Frasier? Like, were your parents big Frasier fans?
Seinfeld.
Actually, Seinfeld, excuse me.
Actually, I was named after Eric Kramer, the quarterback of Chicago Bears.
No way.
No way.
I swear.
Interesting.
Like
never
the 1995, like, best Bears quarterback that they had had in about 20-something years.
Could have been McMahon, but they went with Kramer.
I mean, it could have been Moses Moreno. It
could have been Moses.
Shane Matthews. I've seen that movie. It's not pretty. I like Kramer.
So while we're talking about Chicago athletes, you don't know him, but you just led me right where I wanted to go. So
good
job. There have been a lot of comparisons. I'm sure that you've heard Patrick Mahomes to Steph Curry, Patrick Mahomes to LeBron James, Patrick Mahomes to Michael Jordan. And we heard Tony Romo make that comparison on the broadcast last week. And I think that it's still somewhat taboo to make the Michael Jordan comparisons. And then the owner of the football team, Clark Hunt, said this.
Certainly a goal for us to grow our fan base. And when you have a successful team, that helps. And obviously when you have a star player, that also helps. Our family was and still is with the Chicago Bulls. So we got to live through that experience with Michael Jordan and see it firsthand. That was a special time for the Bulls organization, and Michael did a lot to grow their brand, not only nationally, but on an international basis. And I think certainly to some degree, Patrick gives us that same opportunity.
So now we got Clark Hunt making comparisons to Michael Jordan, Patrick Mahomes. Hear me out, and then I'll let you guys take this one, all right? Right now, those arguments are silly. If you want to make the argument to LeBron James, now they're both really marketable and had success earlier in their careers, then fine, I could hear that. The reason that I think the Jordan argument is still taboo is because how many sports does 99.9% of the fan base point to and say, yep, that was the best player? And in basketball, that's the case with Michael Jordan, and maybe you could say in hockey with Wayne Gretzky. But besides that, if you ask a bunch of different baseball fans who the best all-time player is, you're going to get five or six different answers. The best all-time tennis player, the best all-time golfer, hell, to some extent, even the best all-time football player. In the last couple of years, I think that's become Tom Brady. But if somebody wanted to make the argument for Jerry Rice or Lawrence Taylor, I would certainly listen. So to say that Patrick Mahomes is on the level or can be for Michael Jordan, maybe he can. But BK, I think we're probably at minimum, a decade away from that conversation making sense.
Yeah, sure. I do think there's one place where we can look at this comparison, and it's interesting to me. And given where we are in this spot, right, given where the Chiefs are right now, you grew up with the Bulls, Heiss.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've always heard, and I was too young to truly understand what was taking place at the time, but there would be nights where the Bulls were reeling. They would lose three straight or whatever, and Jordan would come in, and in that given night, whatever he needed to do, he was going to make sure that they didn't lose that game.
Right.
Like, Michael Jordan was just not going to lose. He could have had 12 assists that night if that's what it took, 50 points if that's what it took, 27 rebounds. Like, he was going to find a way to win that game. That's where I think the comparison is really interesting, given what the Chiefs are against right now. This is a borderline must-win game for the Chiefs. Mahomes needs to stop the bleeding. The Chiefs need to stop the bleeding. And so this is a game on Monday night against the Chargers where if you want to have that comparison, the comparison is Patrick Mahomes needs to do what Michael Jordan did in the 90s and that the Chiefs aren't losing this game because Patrick Mahomes is not going to allow them to lose this game.
I think the problem, though, is that you're dealing with a guy that can have the ball in his hands at any given point. And with Mahomes, it's whenever the offense is on the field. He can't go and play linebacker.
I'm glad you said, like, how many games has Patrick Mahomes cost the Chiefs since he's been the starter? Zero?
I can't think of many. No, and again, I was also an advocate of not getting him back on the field until after the bye week. I don't think he's 100% healthy at this point, and even if the Chiefs are going out and trotting him at near full health, you know, you have a situation with really bad turf and high altitude going up against the Chargers in Mexico City that has me concerned, especially with a guy that's coming off a bad ankle injury and a pretty serious dislocated knee. I think what Clark Hunt was getting at was more of the marketability side. I think we can all agree that when Jordan took the NBA by storm, when he ended up becoming this iconic player, the championships helped solidify all of that. And that was sort of when I grew up. I was born in 88. So watching Jordan drop, you know, 30-something points per game in the late 90s, he averaged 35 points a game, 37 points per game in 86, 87. But it was kind of, you know, empty calories. The Bulls weren't necessarily winning. They were getting stopped by Detroit towards the end of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Once Jordan started to have a winning culture around him, when the defense for Chicago, nobody talks about how good that Bulls defense was. And so what I found interesting in all of this and in watching what happened last week, didn't it kind of feel like when Matt Moore was on the field for Kansas City, that the defense all of a sudden woke up? They're like, oh, I have a 5.5-month-old child. You know, he likes to grab onto things. He likes to hold on for comfort to a little spit-up cloth. It's his binky. The Chiefs' binky was gone. And so the defense all of a sudden had to wake up and realize, oh, we don't have our security blanket anymore. You know, we didn't know where to go. And then all of a sudden Mahomes comes back. You have some questionable decisions as to who's up front. And then the rushing defense, which was so good the last few games, completely goes away. I know I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, but I think the point is that Mahomes can only do so much. There's only so much that's in his control. And coming back last week against Tennessee, he did everything he could. And I don't know if it's necessarily fair to put that sort of expectations on him, even when he's doing his job. It's just Jordan could take over a game on both sides. Mahomes can't.
Think about how many games that Patrick Mahomes played in, the losses that he's had. How many has he had now? 7, 8 in his career, maybe 9, that he had nothing to do with. Like on Sunday versus Tennessee, that might have been the best Patrick Mahomes that we've seen. And he was coming back from all the injuries, and it was a road game and all these issues that he was dealing with. And all that guy did was toss for 440. If his receivers would have helped him, it probably would have been closer to 500 yards, 3 touchdowns, and no picks. So I think that there's been a lot of games, BK, that you can point to. The only game that people are overly harsh for Patrick Mahomes was last year versus the Rams, where some people go, well, Pat cost you that game because he threw 3 interceptions. Didn't he also throw for 6 touchdowns in that game? So if that's bad Patrick Mahomes, if that's Pat costing you, then I'll take that every single week.
That team also went to the Super Bowl last year, too. Let's not forget about the Rams actually being a pretty dominant team.
So I understand 100% everything that you guys are saying. But the Chiefs defense is what it is at this point. Like, this is what they're going to be. They're not going to get better because they're not adding any more talent. This is the same personnel. These are the same coaches. Like, this is the standard that they've played to. So this is the standard that I'm going to expect them to continue playing to. This is completely unfair, what I'm about to say. It's completely unfair to Patrick Mahomes. On Sunday, don't settle for 6 field goals. Like, it's completely unfair for me to say that. But defense, and this is also an Andy Reid point as well, go for it on 4th down. Like, if you got a 4th-and-2 from the 33-yard line, go for it.
Trust your MVP to make plays.
Go with your MVP player and go for the touchdown. That's one of the issues that they've had all season long. If you're settling for field goals and you've got the defense that they have, yes, ultimately, you're probably going to end up losing that game when you score 32 points. And so moving forward, that's something that he has to be better at. You've got to finish drives, and I am going to put that on Patrick Mahomes because this defense, I'm not expecting to get any better.
To me, that's much more on Andy. Like, we saw a couple of times this year, Patrick Mahomes was pissed off and essentially tried to wave Andy off the field. And that only works if you're Peyton Manning, you've been playing for 10 years. Then you can be like, nah, Dungy, I'm actually going to stay out here. You get the first down, and it's all good. I don't know if Pat's got that kind of collateral just yet over Andy Reid, but I think that's more of a Reid issue. I agree with what you're saying. Like, that's definitely been a major issue with this team. Last year, they got to the red zone, they scored 6. This year, they get to the red zone, they either score 3, or they miss a field goal wide left, or they screw up the snap, or something bad happens. So that's been a huge difference in why this offense, at this time last year, Heiss, averaged 35.4 points per game, and right now they're at 28.4.
Well, BK, you brought up an interesting point, and I remember having the conversation with you, maybe it was last Tuesday, it might have been a couple Tuesdays ago, when the Chiefs' defense was starting to improve at stopping the run. And I know you talked about it a little bit, too, with no Mike Pennell on the field last Sunday. If we were to understand what the Chiefs' defense is, you said, we know what they are at this point. But they also showed radical signs of improvement over a three-week stretch. Do we know? I mean, is it a personnel decision? Is it about the offense making up for the inadequacies of the defense? Like, do we exactly know what this defense is? Because I just have a hard time right now, based on the numbers that I'm seeing with Mahomes, of really putting a lot of this on him.
Well, let's get into that on the other side, because I think we do.
Okay.
I think they've told us all year what they are, and they've continued telling us moving forward what they are. So let's get into that a little bit on the other side.
We'll do that. We'll go around the NFL, and we'll talk sports right here on The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Full house today. Kramer on the controls, Benny Heitz, Brandon Kiley, yours truly, the sports machine, Sean Levine. Speaking of full house, quick trivia question. Can anybody name the dog on Full House?
Nope.
Not even a chance.
Comet is what we were looking for.
Comet?
Comet is what we were looking for.
How often do they reference Comet?
He's in probably every third or fourth episode. It's not like Uncle Jesse or Uncle Joey or anything like that.
Is Comet still alive for the Full House reboot?
It's a great question.
Sean hasn't watched a show since 1995, so he can't tell you.
Unfortunately, I don't think so. Heist, I don't think so.
Do you remember the name of the cat on Cheers?
No.
I don't know if there was
ever
a cat.
I'm actually stunned that you don't know that one.
I don't think there was a cat.
Do you remember the fish from Frasier?
There was a dog on Frasier.
Oh, it's a dog?
Named Eddie.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually do.
I'm glad you called my bluff.
Yeah,
this is very easy in.
So coming up in about 5 minutes, we'll go around the NFL. Coming up in about 15 minutes. There's one thing that the Chiefs are failing at this year that they absolutely dominated a year ago, but you fellas were in the middle of a conversation.
Yeah, so Heist asked the question of, are we sure that the defense can't improve? Because they did for a three-week period, and I said at the time, this was going into last weekend's game, I felt like the run defense might have been fixed. And for a three-game span between the Broncos, Packers, and Vikings, it certainly appeared that way. Heist, to answer your question and why I believe that we know what they are at this point, the defense has looked like the 20th ranked defense all year. Like, this is what it looks like if you are a middle of the pack to slightly below average defense. You go through the ups and the downs. The great defenses don't go through those ups and downs. The terrible defenses never have the ups. Like, last year's Chiefs defense never showed the signs of life that they showed in this three-week span against the Broncos, the Packers, and the Vikings. But right now, they're 19th in points allowed per game. They're 22nd in yards allowed per game. And I think that's pretty much what they are. So moving forward, they're going to have more good games. They're also going to have a lot more bad games the way that we saw against the Titans, because that's what this defense is.
And that's perfectly reasonable. You're going to have opportunities to show that you're better than what the indications on the schedule have said. I like the fact that they're putting a lot more pressure on the quarterback now. You know, before they had back-to-back games against the Colts and the Texans, they did not get one sack. After that, 9 sacks against Denver, 5 against Green Bay, 1 against the Vikings, and 4 against Tennessee. They forced a few more fumbles. They're not taking the ball away either, which is another problem and an indictment, frankly, on cornerback and safety play on this team. Like, you need to be able to create some turnovers, flip a short field for Mahomes, because he's already doing so much when they're playing at the long field starting at the own 25. If you can start to get yourself back to the idea of being able to slow down the run, force teams to force a little bit more turnovers, then all of a sudden I do think they can make some slight improvements.
I think the frustration people have with this defense is, and everything you said, BK, is right. By the numbers, they're better than last year. They're around 20. That's what we asked for. We said they can win a Super Bowl with that type of a defense. It's just how they've gotten there, because everybody knows the run defense isn't this bad. They're not one of the worst in the history of the NFL. They're not good, but I don't think they're really this bad. And when it comes to the secondary has been a real pleasant surprise. There are a couple of individuals, and I don't even need to say their names because you guys know who I'm talking about at this point on the defensive side of the ball, that haven't lived up to their contract or the hype that we thought coming in. I think that's the frustration with the defense is, yeah, they're 20th, but they could be 12th or 13th if a couple of guys just played up to their standard. So I think that's the frustration right now is the defense is okay, but they could be even better, even with the roster they have right now.
They could be. I think we know now. Like, we have 10 weeks of a sample size, and when you're playing fantasy football, Heist, you know at this point, okay, these are the matchups that you want to exploit.
Right.
And
I'm
these
not looking are the to defenses. Play Kansas City anytime soon.
Exactly. These are the matchups that you look to avoid, and these are the ones that you look to exploit. And in fantasy right now, the Chiefs run defense is one of the defenses that you want to exploit because they are what they are. I think we know that at this point.
I think this defense has clear. I think you made a really good point when you said that this defense has had their moment in the sun for a couple of weeks this year, whether it was the Minnesota game, whether it was the Oakland game.
Those are the moments where they're looking directly into the sun.
That's fair, too. And they need some sunglasses, and they need some good-ass ones with, what's it called, UV protection or whatever?
I'll take them. Whatever everybody was wearing during the solar eclipse would be ideal.
That thing was so overblown, the solar eclipse. Like,
I didn't realize
I was supposed to be impressed. I wasn't that impressed.
It was supposed to be a giveaway joke. I didn't realize this was going to trigger something.
Yeah, just everybody told me, go outside. You got to see this once in a lifetime. Then I went outside, and I'm like, that's it. That's this solar eclipse.
You probably should have been wearing the glasses, Sean.
No, I was wearing the glasses.
Oh, you were wearing the glasses.
If not,
okay.
I'd be blind right now.
Oh, fair enough.
Anyway, I think that this defense, like BK said, they've clearly shown signs of being good. The problem is, consistently, they haven't. And I was the idiot who came on the radio on Friday and said, if they can slow down Derrick Henry and the Tennessee running game, then I'll come on here and say the run defense has turned a corner. Because like you guys said, against Denver, they were awesome. The next week against Aaron Jones, he beat him in the passing game. And then what they did against Dalvin Cook, I think opened my eyes and a lot of people's eyes of when they're good, they can be great. They just shut down the best running back in football, 21 carries on 71 yards. Now we got Derrick Henry coming up. We're feeling pretty good about ourselves. And then specifically that fourth quarter against Tennessee happened where you lost all your goodwill.
One last thought about their ability to be able to slow down the run. You brought up Minnesota, but remember they also beat Baltimore again, second straight year that they were able to take out Lamar Jackson. And the Patriots' rushing attack isn't something that I'm particularly worried about. And those are probably your two biggest adversaries if you're going into the postseason trying to think to yourself, who's going to be my biggest challenge here if you're Kansas City? It's going to be Baltimore, and it's going to be New England. And remember, one game sample size in the postseason, a lot of things can change.
And the Baltimore win looks better and better by the week. Like, I think you would argue right now that Baltimore is the best team in the NFL, whether you're talking about the most complete team, whether you're talking about the
best, best team in the AFC or the best team in the NFL.
I'd say they're the best team in the NFL. Is there, you got a better one?
I might have to chew on that for a little bit. I know we got around the NFL coming up, but I think there's a couple teams in the NFC that I would put ahead of Baltimore.
Oh, I certainly don't think it's obvious. I don't think that you can say, like, a lot of years with the Patriots, that's the best team, then there's a big gap. But if you made me list right now, who's the best team, the most complete team, best coach team, best quarterback team, I'd say Baltimore. And that should give Chiefs fans hope and optimism because in your last, what, 22, 23 games, you've played Baltimore twice. You've beat Baltimore twice. So if that's the best team in football and you can beat them, then you should be feeling pretty good about yourself. But certainly there's a conversation with probably four or five teams in the NFL right now for being the best. Speaking of the NFL, after a quick break, we'll go around the NFL right here on The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
And we roll on. The Drive. Benny Heiss. Who? Yeah, that's right. Benny Heiss. BK. Kramer, myself, the sports machine, Sean Levine, taking you up until 6 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio and all over the world on the radio.com app. As we always do at the top of the 5 o'clock hour, we'll get you the hits. And before we get out of here, we'll take a trip back inside the mind of the machine. But right now, how about we take a trip around the NFL?
It's time to go around the NFL on The Drive.
All right, let's start with tonight's game between the Steelers and the Browns. We've mentioned this a couple of times. Let's get your guys' breakdown of this because it does actually legitimately have some playoff implications. The Steelers, as of today, would be the sixth seed in the AFC. They're sitting at 5-4. If they were to win this game, this sounds insane, but they would actually have the same record going into the weekend as the Kansas City Chiefs. And don't look now, but the Browns have technically not been eliminated from the playoffs. They are at 3-6, and going into the game tonight, they are a 3-point home favorite. Sean, let's start with you. What are you anticipating tonight between the Browns and the Steelers?
There's a handful of teams that, for whatever reason, think they can make the playoffs, and I guess that reason is there's just not a lot of dominance right now in the NFL. I heard Sam Darnold talking about he thinks the Jets can still make the playoffs. Myles Garrett was talking about he thinks the Browns can still make the playoffs. I'm going to tell you about a team that actually is going to make the playoffs, and that's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if you got down on them, I have no problem with it. When Ben Roethlisberger went down and they threw in whatever Devlin Hodges is after Mason Rudolph. But Mason Rudolph has actually been pretty good. And BK, I'm not going to let you get away with what you did earlier. You said they've got Mason Rudolph. That's their quarterback. They can't win. I'll say, you know who the other quarterback is? Baker Mayfield.
Mason Rudolph stinks. Don't Baker tell me that Mayfield he's been pretty
stinks.
Good since he's been in. Mason Rudolph is terrible.
Give me his stats and give me Baker Mayfield's stats,
right,
and
listen,
I bet his are better.
I understand. Watch them tonight and you tell me who you think's better.
You
watch them.
Okay. Let's revisit this comment. What do you want to bet? Chipotle burrito? Carrington style? With
that,
guacamole?
That Baker Mayfield is better than Mason Rudolph?
I think Mason Rudolph.
If it's Carrington style, is one of you ever going to see that burrito?
No, nobody has a chance of paying the bet. It's Carrington style. I think that Mason Rudolph outplays Baker Mayfield tonight, and I think that Pittsburgh beats Cleveland. There, I said it. That's what happens tonight. Cleveland, by the way, a favorite.
How do you define playing better? Is it just purely based on
stats?
Oh,
you'll know. When Baker Mayfield goes out there and throws one touchdown, three picks, and doesn't do much in the running game. You'll know what I'm talking
about. Okay, that's perfectly reasonable. Because, again, if you think that Baker and Pittsburgh, if you think Pittsburgh's going to win and win comfortably, Baker could still have a better fantasy performance, throw for over 300 yards and a couple touchdowns in garbage time. I just want to make the determination as the witness in the room to try and determine how you guys are going to put that bet together. I think this game's fascinating for a variety of reasons, because you have two really good running backs that are getting involved in James Conner and Nick Chubb. I think Kansas City fans will get a chance to see what's happening with Kareem Hunt now on another team, so there's a different perspective there that you can try and determine and figure out as to whether or not, you know, it's going to work out for them.
When he goes off tonight, you're going to hear a lot of people tomorrow saying, oh man, I wish that he was in the Chiefs uniform.
Yeah, but I don't, again, it's, I don't think he will. I think Pittsburgh's defense has been part of the reason that they've been successful. Mason Rudolph has been a placeholder. He's been fine. He's been helping them move along, but the Pittsburgh's defense, and particularly with Minkah Fitzpatrick, is part of the reason that they've turned their season around. That's been the difference for them. So Cleveland 3-point favorite at home. It was the same situation with them against Buffalo that a lot of people were surprised by. I think Cleveland could probably sniff out a win tonight.
The Chiefs were never really, BK, correct me if I'm wrong, in on the Minkah Fitzpatrick thing. Like, we had the conversation.
No, but they were. They weren't going to be able to match what the Steelers draft picks were, because at the time, the Steelers stunk. They were terrible. Mason Rudolph was their quarterback. They were 1-4 on the year. Like, they looked like they were squarely headed for a top 5 pick this year, and they've turned it around, and Minkah Fitzpatrick is a big reason why. But yeah, at the time, there was no way that the Chiefs were going to be able to match the draft picks that the Steelers gave up.
I was just dreaming for a second, imagining what it would have been like if the Chiefs would have made that move and Minkah would have played like that in a Chiefs uniform.
Oh, man.
Would have changed everything.
Yep.
Would have changed everything.
All right, as we continue going around the NFL, let's go to the big game of the weekend. Of course, that is Lamar Jackson taking on Deshaun Watson. This is a game between the Texans and the Ravens. It is in Baltimore, and the Ravens are a 4-point favorite. The question that everybody has been asking all week that I will ask you guys right now, between Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, who would you take if you were in a draft? And obviously Patrick Mahomes was off the board, and you got to take the second pick between one of these two.
69306. I want to get the consensus on this one. Who would you rather have? Obviously, Pat's off the board, like BK said. You're starting a franchise, Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson. You can't go wrong with either one. Heading into this year, it's funny to think that Baker Mayfield, the guy we were just talking about, was part of this conversation. I think I'd go with Lamar Jackson. My only hesitation is he's kind of a skinny dude who runs the football, and when you combine those things throughout the history of the NFL, usually those guys end up broken in two pieces. So if I knew that they were both going to stay healthy, I would definitely take Lamar Jackson. I'm just so impressed with how good he's been. Obviously, he's a much better passer than I thought. You could also argue he's the best running back in the NFL.
Yeah, he's been absolutely dominant, and he has more rushing yards than their number one running back in Mark Ingram. I'd still take Deshaun Watson because I believe in his ability to do everything on the NFL field. I'm still waiting for Lamar Jackson to develop more as a passer. He's got a terrific arm. He's obviously, his ability to be able to scramble out of the pocket and be able to have a lot of these designed runs under John Harbaugh's system has allowed him, with really good coaching, to be incredibly successful. But I just look at the nature of the position. I worry about Lamar Jackson getting hurt eventually over time. You're right. If you're talking about his frame, if you're talking about being able to hold up over that type of punishment, you know, guys, he's rushing more than 10 times per game at the quarterback spot. Plus, he's dealing with quarterback pressures. Plus, he's taking sacks every so often. I just think the longevity of Deshaun Watson is likely going to hold up a tad bit more than Lamar Jackson, and I think he's a more polished passer. So I'd rather have Deshaun Watson.
I also want to see Lamar Jackson do this consistently against good teams.
Sure.
Like, he shredded the Dolphins. He shredded the Bengals last weekend. It's been pretty good against everybody else. Like, if you look at his numbers, there is a huge split between the first game that he played in, the last game that he played in this year,
absolutely,
and everything else. In terms of the actual numbers, here they are for you. Every other game not named the Bengals and the Dolphins, he's thrown for 7 touchdowns and 5 interceptions on the season. 84 quarterback rating. That is very average. Now, I'm not telling you Lamar isn't amazing. He is. He's been very good. But we've kind of overestimated some of his improvement because so much of those stats came in the two games against the two teams that aren't trying to win this year.
For what it's worth, I would take Lamar Jackson this week in this matchup, but I think long-term I'd still take Watson. And from a fantasy perspective, give me Lamar Jackson at home against Deshaun Watson.
Let's continue going around the NFL. The 49ers starting to get hit by the injury bug too. They're starting to feel what the Chiefs have felt so far this year. It's looking like George Kittle is going to be out this weekend. It is possible that Emmanuel Sanders is going to join him on the sidelines as well. And we'll see what happens with their offensive line injuries. The 49ers are playing the Cardinals this weekend. The Cardinals are a 10.5-point road underdog, but the Cardinals played them really tight on Thursday Night Football a couple of weeks ago. Sean, do you see any reason to believe that the 49ers could have another let-up game and lose two in a row after starting the year 8-0?
I wouldn't be shocked. They've got a really good defense, a suspect offense. I don't believe in Jimmy. I just love saying Jimmy because it's so much fun to say, but he's not going to do anything coming up this Sunday without Kittle, without Sanders. I mean, take a look at his stats this year. Yeah, his team wins a lot, and that's what would really be the MO throughout his entire career. Jimmy Garoppolo, by the numbers, I think has the best winning percentage of any starting quarterback in the NFL that's played over 20 games. That being said, he's got 14 touchdowns, 8 interceptions this year. He's not that good. The team is, though.
Yeah, it's what he starts 16-3 over the course of his NFL career. That's pretty remarkable.
Not bad.
So I think San Francisco wins, especially at home against Arizona. The Cardinals have been a very frustrating team over the course of the year, but I do think it's going to be closer than most people anticipate. 10.5 just seems a little bit too much. What's weird is that they had issues at the running back spot in the beginning of the year with Matt Breida, with Tevin Coleman. So guys like Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson were out dominating for the 49ers in a really good rushing attack, and they didn't have to worry because George Kittle was still on the field, and Debo Samuel was out there making plays, and the guy that we all thought was going to be their number one receiver at the beginning of the year, Dante Pettis, has basically done nothing. So even though they still have their top guys at the running spot, losing Kittle, losing Emmanuel Sanders, who's made a major difference since he's come over there, could play some serious issues for San Francisco. I do think that game is going to be closer than most people anticipate.
I think the 49ers win. I would run with the Cardinals with those points.
I will say, Cliff,
you have to run to the Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury, that's scary, man.
He's been better than I thought. Like, I thought that the reason that he got the
he's
job.
He's been competent.
I thought the reason he got the job is because he kind of looked the part because he was Pat's coach in college and he became that hot name all of a sudden. He's been much better than I thought he was. Like, he got fired from Texas Tech, and all of a sudden, he became a hot commodity in the NFL. He's been pretty good.
His job was to make Kyler Murray look pretty good, and Kyler Murray so far this year has looked pretty good.
Yeah, they finally have a bit of a competent defense, too. Patrick Peterson coming back has made an enormous difference for that team.
That's it. That's around the NFL. That's our trip. All right, let's get back into the Chiefs game, where I'm glad you're here, Ice, because I got a question to ask.
Well, it's nice of you.
All right.
Glad to be here, too.
For several reasons.
Okay.
That plaid looks good on you, by the way, brother.
Thank you.
I think that if you're talking about hatred coming from Chiefs fans, at the very top of the list, right, it's probably John Elway, one. It's probably Peyton Manning, two. Is there an argument for Phillip Rivers, three? Because BK said earlier today that he thinks that it's Tom Brady when it comes to the venom coming from Chiefs fans. I think it's Phillip Rivers. The Chiefs fans and Phillip Rivers have a very unique relationship where for the last 5 or 6 years, the Chiefs have dominated them. And every time they play Phillip Rivers, he looks like absolute hot garbage. And then you look at his career numbers in 27 games against the Chiefs, he's actually 14-13. I think if Chiefs fans start to list the quarterbacks that they dislike the most, Elway 1, Manning 2, and I'd put Rivers ahead of Brady.
Doesn't this feel like a bit more of a recency bias question, though? Like, I think there's so many people that have the Tom Brady game that won the AFC Championship game fresh in their mind. So I think more people are likely to gravitate to Tom Brady and dinking and dunking with Julian Edelman and Rex Burkhead with that go-ahead touchdown than Phillip Rivers this year. Phillip Rivers doesn't feel like a threat to Kansas City Chiefs fans this year. Now, we'll see what happens on Monday night, and if all of a sudden Phillip Rivers orchestrates a game-winning touchdown drive in Mexico City that really puts a big axe in the middle of what Kansas City wants to do as far as their playoff run and positioning is concerned, then I think it'll likely go back to Phillip Rivers. But I still think right now it's still fresh with Tom Brady winning that game for New England over Kansas City.
Speaking of recency bias, where does Derrick Henry rank on this list? I say that and it sounds absurd.
No, you're right.
But we've seen it in the playoffs. We've seen it now multiple times in the regular season.
Marcus and Mariota was on that list too.
The way that it happened is just so infuriating because he's just more physical than everybody that's on your defense. I don't think he reaches the level of a top three. I don't think he's up here with these quarterbacks.
No, I agree.
I think he's definitely in the list. Like, if we were doing a Levine's list of the top 10 most hated Chiefs players of the last 15 years, I think Derrick Henry probably makes that
list. You brought up Peyton Manning. Where does Andrew Luck rank on that list?
Probably in the top 10, not much higher than that.
Top 10? I thought it would be a little bit lower than that.
The guys that you guys are listing, I think all live in the same family. Andrew Luck and Derrick Henry and James Harrison and Ben Roethlisberger, like all these guys that have cost the Chiefs games. I think we're talking about a completely different list when everybody agrees. Like, there's no question Elway's enemy, public enemy number one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it doesn't matter if you're the 10-year-old Chiefs fan or the 100-year-old Chiefs fan listening right now.
Being
John
in the division
Elway's
changes things because of how often you play.
For sure.
Like, that's one of the biggest reasons why Elway's on this list. It's one of the biggest reasons why Manning is on this list. If he didn't come to the Broncos, if it was only his Colts career that we were talking about,
right,
I don't think it would even be close. Like, Manning wouldn't be in that same conversation with Elway. So that's where the differentiating factor is. I said this earlier today, Heis, going back to kind of the Philip Rivers conversation. I don't think Chiefs fans hate him. I think Chiefs fans are annoyed by him.
Well,
I think
he just has an annoying face.
He has an annoying face, the style of play, the release that he has, like everything about the way that he plays the game and the clapping right before the snap comes off because it's getting close to the play clock.
Doing like
down
the hoedown dance. I'm sure you guys saw all those videos of Philip Rivers on Twitter before.
I think they find him annoying more than they hate him. Whereas with guys like Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or John Elway, there's an actual hatred there behind Chiefs.
Right, a lot of those wins came in real critical spots. It's probably like Derek Carr. A lot of Chiefs fans find Derek Carr and the weird eyeliner that he has underneath his face to be fairly annoying. So I think that's probably a good comparison. I just figured Luck would be higher on that list because of that awful playoff loss.
Sure, I'm judging these guys by the way they look. Derek Carr, Philip Rivers. Got any problem with the way Carson Wentz looks?
I think he's a handsome man.
I do too. You look a little bit like him now that I think about it.
You know what people said that I look like? Who? Is his former teammate, Nick Foles.
You do look like Nick Foles.
A little bit.
With the glasses that he was wearing with the hat on the sideline. Now, apparently, Nick Foles is my doppelganger, but he's much richer than I am.
He doesn't look
and
like,
he has a ring.
He doesn't look like an NFL player. Like, and I'm not saying that because I said he looks like you. When he's got that hat and the glasses on the sidelines, like that guy's a math teacher. That guy's definitely a math teacher, not an NFL player.
Yeah, he kind of looks like he could be giving fantasy advice.
Got a little breaking news from the Kansas City Chiefs. How about this one? This is really good news for Kansas City. Eric Fisher, a full participant today in practice. It's the first time that he has been a full participant at Chiefs practice since, I believe, week 2. So Eric Fisher might be able to actually make his return next Monday night against the Chargers.
I'll take things I would have never celebrated 2 years ago for 800, Alex. Eric Fisher's coming back. I'm feeling fantastic.
Well, by the way, here's why. Cam Irving, also a full participant at practice today with an ankle injury, apparently.
Chargers don't have a chance.
Eric Fisher might be making his
Joey
debut.
Bosa doesn't know what's going to be hitting him.
Yeah, that Cam Irving news doesn't get me all that excited. The Eric Fisher news absolutely does.
The Cam Irving news is why the Eric Fisher news matters.
I think that we were talking about earlier today because Tyrann Mathieu said that he thinks Tyreek Hill is a top five player that he's ever played with. And that's a mouthful if you think about the J.J. Watt and the different players Deshaun Watson that he's played with in his career. And then I made the argument that I think Tyreek Hill is probably, if you're talking about non-quarterback offensive players, he's probably one of the five best weapons. BK said he's got him at number 2. I got McCaffrey, Zeke, Dalvin, Saquon, and Tyreek Hill. I think that overall, when you're talking about the weapon that Tyreek Hill has become at this point, Heis, nobody can argue how good he is if he's one of the top 5 or 10 best wide receivers in the league. The question just becomes, can you make the argument that he's the best offensive weapon in the NFL? It's not a quarterback.
It's a fairly compelling argument, especially because of how much better he's gotten with route running, how available he's gotten himself. He was targeted 19 times last week.
That's insane.
19 times. I'm trying to remember if there was any other wide receiver this year that's received more targets in a game that wasn't like a fringe level, like over the middle Cooper Kupp, Jarvis Landry type guy. This is a number one receiver that's going to get the best corner likely shadowing him on a per game basis, and he still was targeted 19 times against a team that usually slows down tempo Tennessee.
So the reason, Heis, I bring that up is because I was able to say into a microphone that Tyreek Hill is the, I'd say, fifth. I just gave you my list. Best, most dangerous offensive non-quarterback in the entire NFL. At the same time, I don't know if he's even as important to this team as Eric Fisher. I mean, if you really think about it, what Eric Fisher does, not just keeps Pat in one piece, his blind side, but also creates holes for the running game. We saw this team for a few weeks without Tyreek Hill. They kept their head above water. We've seen this team for most of the season without Eric Fisher, and I feel like that loss might be even bigger. I know it's crazy to say we're talking about a left tackle versus maybe the best offensive non-quarterback weapon in all of football, but the way that it's played out, I think Fisher might even be more important.
I don't think it's necessarily that crazy. Think about how really successful teams have built themselves up and become championship caliber. They've done it through their offensive line and then found the skill positions around them. Like, that's been the issue with Cleveland this year, right? Cleveland has a franchise quarterback. They have one of the best wide receivers in the game. They have a top 5, top 6 running back. Maybe you can make an argument that he's top 7 in Nick Chubb, and nobody to block, nobody to protect, nobody to help in pass protection, and they've had inconsistencies all season long. You know, what Cleveland was doing before John Dorsey got there, and it's why I'm in the team Sashi Brown camp, is that they were finding all the other positions to be able to put their team and set them up for long-term success. Then once they had all those other really good positions settled and figured out whether it be on the offensive line, on the defensive line, building through the front 7 on both sides, then you go ahead and get your quarterback and get him in a rookie deal. Like, they were set up so well. Sashi would have taken Baker Mayfield. And the problem is that they just didn't trust the process that he was building, went to John Dorsey, and he kind of blew it all up. So I don't think it's not reasonable at all to go with the idea that Eric Fisher is a much needed, necessary piece of this offense.
Yeah, Eric Fisher is necessary. All the pieces that they have are necessary. I would say if I was ranking it, it would be Patrick Mahomes 1, Tyreek Hill 2, and then Eric Fisher 3. By the way, a little bit of other news from the injury report as I'm kind of looking at the full thing now. Mitchell Schwartz was limited earlier today at practice, but there are a few other things that are kind of notable in this. Sammy Watkins was a full participant, but he was listed with a groin injury. It makes sense. If you were watching the game on Sunday, there was that sweep that he had where he tried to kind of turn the corner, and he was never able to do so, and he didn't look 100% after that. Frank Clark was a full participant with a neck issue. Obviously, we know about that now. LDT was a full participant today, so they might be able to get him back next week as well. That would be of note. And then Kendall Fuller, also a full participant today with his thumb issue, so they might be able to get him back and move Tyrann Mathieu back to his natural position at safety.
Wow, sounds like they're getting healthy at the right time. Now, you got the bye coming up the week after this, so that'll be another week off.
Bad turf coming up on Monday night, too, so it's important that they stay healthy.
Absolutely, and I was thinking about this. Like, the 2 seed might be gone if we want to have that conversation. I think the 1 seed died with the Tennessee loss. The 2 seed technically is still out there. Think about how important it would be for this team, not just to have the home field advantage, but to have that week off. So if they can get there, I think it's all hands on deck, and I think that starts coming up versus the Chargers on Monday Night Football. We were talking about this yesterday, Heis, how every single team this year has kind of played the Chiefs as their Super Bowl opponent. We saw that from Tennessee. Tennessee won, all of a sudden that makes their season, and now they think they can beat anybody. I think that's how the Chiefs have to handle at least the next few games. And then maybe after that, they win, they create a little bit of separation, and then we can start talking about things that are good and not scary, like the Chargers in your rearview mirror and the Raiders having a better record than you if you lose on Monday Night Football. But I think these are close to must-win games, all hands on deck. This is not a drill. This is the real deal coming up against the Chargers on Monday.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely in that spot where they have to go ahead and get a big win and deal with the altitude in Mexico City and beat a team that they frankly should beat. Chargers, I know there was high expectations at the beginning of the year, but they have not lived up to it. They've had inconsistencies. That loss to the Raiders was crushing for them. They have finally had some positive momentum. They beat the hell out of the Green Bay Packers at home in their soccer stadium. And I thought, okay, this is what the Chargers typically do. The last few years, they start off slow, then build some momentum, get themselves into the postseason, then let a lot of people down. But they did not win against the Raiders in a game that they probably should have won. So they're probably going to expect this game to be similar for the Kansas City Chiefs, but they are a better team than the Chargers. That's what they've shown over the first 10 weeks of the season. And then you're right, a team against like the Raiders now coming to Arrowhead. Chiefs need to win that game. Patriots on the road, that's a very tough one. They should win against the Broncos. The Bears on the road in a cold game in Chicago. Weird things have happened. I think about what happened when the Rams played the Bears last year, where Jared Goff completely turned into a pumpkin in 5-degree weather, and the Bears were able to sneak out a win despite Mitch Trubisky being terrible, and then they get the Chargers once again at home. So we're looking at a 6-game stretch where the Chiefs probably realistically should go 5-1 down the stretch of the season.
I don't know if we can play that game right now. Like, I hear what you're saying. You look at the schedule, you get out your old Magnus schedule, and you put the W's and L's, and that's fine. And if you would have done that after the first month of the season, that'd be cool. I mean, they've lost to Jacoby Brissett, right? They just lost last week to Ryan Tannehill. Can't remember the guy's last name. Like, the problem is, last year, all their losses were what you would quantify, quote-unquote, as good losses. There's no shame losing to Russell Wilson or Tom Brady or Jared Goff last year, or even losing to the Chargers. I think this year, Heis, in some sense, they've been exposed. Teams have figured out a way to beat them. And I know this much. As of right now, especially coming off that loss to Tennessee and the way you lost it, nobody's afraid of the Chiefs, including the Chargers. The Chargers expect to beat the Chiefs coming up on Monday night.
That I agree with. That I think they can go, and especially preparing all week in Mexico City, I think is going to be an advantage for them. If Kansas City can slow down Melvin Gordon, if they can take Austin Ekeler out of the mix, they'll be fine.
Don't those sound like impossible ifs right now? Based on what Derrick Henry did, like you're kind of brushing by. Well, all they got to do is, can they do that?
I think they can. I think that right personnel has to be on the field. I think they have to make more of a commitment to it. Like, I don't. Melvin Gordon has had three really good games in a row, but he still has been bad throughout the course of the season as well. It's just depending on what the Chargers try to do in this offense that Kansas City, I think, can absolutely try to take that away if they want to.
They need to take this game as seriously as they took the Vikings and Packers game. I think it's as simple as that. The Chiefs' game plans coming into both the Packers and the Vikings game were perfect. They were exactly what you want from Andy Reid. They were exactly what you want from Steve Spagnuolo. They embraced this new identity defensively where they were blitzing the hell out of the quarterbacks. They were selling out to stop the run. They were putting guys onto the field that they knew could stop the run. It was Derek Nnadi. It was Colin Saunders. It was Chris Jones, all three on the defensive line more often than not. And when you've got those guys out there, you've got a chance. Well, Mike Pinnell was inactive on Sunday, and that was a problem for them. And it's crazy that we're saying that Mike Pinnell was one of the reasons that they lost because he was inactive.
No,
but it's true.
Made a substantial difference.
When you've got guys out there that can do the job that you need done, you've got a shot. And on Sunday, they didn't set themselves up to be able to get that job done, and ultimately it came back to bite them in the ass.
And also, Tennessee, amongst all teams in the NFL, are top five in consistent volume in rushing. Like, they're going to run regardless of whether Derrick Henry has it or not. Chargers sometimes can be hit or miss. They've been better at it lately because Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler have been better, but they can easily try and take them out of the rushing game and make Phillip Rivers try and beat you.
That's one of the most frustrating things about this run defense is when you know that Derrick Henry's going to run, when you know the Packers are going to run, they basically tell you, and you still can't stop it. It's all hands on deck. The entire playbook is open, except the Patrick Mahomes quarterback sneak. Everything shy of that, I think you do what you can to win this football game. Because if you beat the Chargers, you create at least a little bit of separation between them. You got 13 days off, and you're going to be feeling pretty good before that Oakland game, which on the horizon is going to be a pretty big game. You win, they win. Both teams are 7-4. They come into Arrowhead. Like, that's going to be a hell of a matchup that we didn't think would be. The flip side of that, the vice versa, I don't even want to talk about it, but I will for the next couple of minutes, is if the Chiefs lose this game and they're 6-5 and the Chargers are 5-6 and the Raiders are ahead of you in the standings, BK, that 13 days is going to feel like 13 months.
Yeah, that's when panic ensues. Like, I have not been willing to take myself to a place this week where I'm panicking at all. I still think this team can win the Super Bowl. Like, I truly believe that. I think that the Chiefs are, in my opinion, still the second best team in the AFC. I think we haven't seen that for most of the year because of the injuries, and I think there's perfectly reasonable explanations as to why they haven't played that way for much of the season, but I think they're still the second best team in the AFC. If they lose this game, and we just talked about the injury report, they're starting to get healthier. They're going to have basically offensively everybody available to them. Mm-hmm. This is the first time literally since the time they took the field in week one that they will actually have their full complement of both pass catchers and offensive linemen potentially. And if they go into this game with all of that and they can't beat the lowly Chargers in a neutral site field, I've got to reevaluate where I am on this team. But I'm not willing to go there until and unless they lose this game.
You've also made the point, too, I believe, on this show that with the Chiefs, it's always been about their offense. It's always been about 15 and the idea that he can carry this team in any situation, regardless of how bad the defense is. So you're right. If these guys are coming back, it's not like the defense is getting any better anytime soon, unless we think they can make that established change at trying to be able to stop the run. But that makes sense as to why you believe they're as good as they are, because if now the offense is at its peak, this is what you anticipated from this team from the very beginning, right?
How much red do you think we're going to see out there? I mean, last year, the game in Los Angeles, it was probably, I'd say, half Chiefs fans. Minnesota a couple of weeks ago, I'd say 30% Vikings fans at Arrowhead, probably 30% Packers fans the week before. I wouldn't blame Chiefs fans for saying, screw it, I'm not going at all. Based on what happened last year, can you imagine? You book a flight, you book a hotel. This isn't just that one road game heist that we all go to or try to go to every year. This is in a different country. You got to get the passport. Like, people went through a lot of crap to go to that game. And then what, 48 hours before kickoff, the NFL says, oh yeah, by the way, the field's not good enough. And all those people that went to go watch the game, watched it on TV like you and I. If there are no Chiefs fans out there, I don't blame them.
I'm still a little bit surprised that we haven't been getting constant updates about the condition of the field in Mexico City.
You can't find it. I've tried. I looked in the dark web. I was like, there's got to be a picture.
Going down Reddit and subreddits trying to figure out what's going on with the turf.
If anybody can find a picture of that field. Wait, the text line can't get pictures, can it? I need to see a picture
sounds
of
like
that field.
Like. Don't send pictures.
The text line cannot and should not be able to get pictures.
I got to see what that field looks like. All the talk about the field, Patrick Mahomes on that field. Last year they canceled the game. And then what? We're just going to see pictures of this brown field that looks like the pumpkin patch on October 29th, 2 days before. I mean, does the field worry you guys at all? Any concern whatsoever?
Yes, I was just going to say, you have a quarterback that's coming back from an ankle injury and a dislocated knee. I'd be very concerned about the field.
Everything I've heard is that they've replaced the field
and that it's
perfect.
I still don't buy into it.
So I'm going to go along with that because it's rainbows and butterflies over here.
I guess. Get George Toma out there to actually fix that field. That's Kramer. That's BK. That's Heiss. I'm the Sports Machine. 3 hours in the book. One more coming up. We get you the hits coming up next on The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2-6.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.